And welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Jake calling in from Idaho. How can we help you today, Jake?
Medium and relationship. I'd like to know, what is the difference between meeting and developing a relationship with someone online and developing a relationship with Yahweh through the Torah?
Yeah, interesting question. I think the answers there are caliber of the content of the message, the importance of the nature of the author of the message, the character, the depth, the perfection, if you will, in Hebrew as a language versus the inadequate and corrupt languages that we use today. So you have a perfect language, perfectly presented by the only perfect entity in the universe, offering a means of personal perfection. So, caliber of the author, caliber of the language, caliber of the content, those things I would say are the difference. But I still like your comparison. You're using words to get to know someone, and the difference is that when, and this is the thing, Jake, that I find with my sons as they, particularly the younger one, who's a smart lad. I mean, he's a very effective communicator. When he's talking with a prospective date online, and you know, if he's going through the texting and all of the instant messaging, what I have found, and this, because we are really best friends, so we're more than just father and son. My youngest and I, we're best friends. And the women that he's talking to almost always present themselves differently than they are.
Certainly.
And with Yahweh, he's bringing himself exactly as he is. So the difference between the person that he's talking to online, trying to get to know, who is misrepresenting themselves, versus someone who is presenting themselves exactly as they are, it's a pretty sizable difference between those two things. In fact, one of the things I told my son is, you know, you want to have interesting dating relationships, things that are memorable, do exactly the opposite of, you know, if a girl says, you know, I just want to have take out and watch a movie, you know, a DVD, then never do take out and a DVD. Instead, take her out to dinner and, you know, go to, you know, a musical performance at the university or something. Always do something that causes both of you to be in a position where all sorts of things are going to happen. You're going to have to respond to them. You know, and do the opposite, you know, of what people are expecting, because most people present themselves in a way that is quite different than who they are. I guess I got to see this more, Jake, than anything else, than when I wrote A Tea with Terrorism and Prophet of Doom, and I had you know, millions, it seemed like, but I'm sure it was just thousands of Muslims write me. And every letter was absolute hypocrisy. You almost wanted to answer every letter with, why don't you look into a mirror and read what you just wrote to me? I don't need to respond to you. Look at what Islam has done to you. And the hypocrisy of people projecting their own faults on other people. We have lost the ability to know what we're like. So I'd say that's the confusion, the babble that influences our own written communications versus the perfection of the language, the content, and the author in the Torah. What do you think?
It strikes me that there's two more facets that we quite haven't addressed.
Please.
The first being that Yahweh has written in the Torah in such a way that it can communicate throughout the duration that it's purposed for, meaning that it can speak to people 1,000 years ago and speak to people today,
as opposed to an instant message or a text, which has the shelf life of warm butter.
Right, right. It has to dwell within the context of the time that it's been sent.
Yeah, yeah. Give you, you obviously know these things, but for the rest of our listeners, the creation account that presents Yahweh talking the universe into existence and equating himself with light had merit to the first hearers of those words. They did not know anything about relativity. They did not know that the cosmic microwave background radiation from the Big Bang had been stretched by 10 to the 12th power, and therefore 6 24-hour Earth days, from our perspective looking back, was 14 billion years in Yahweh's experience as at the site of our, that's 14 billion years from our time is 6 days from his perspective at creation based on relativity. We can learn.
Most of the understanding wasn't developed at that time for them to even comprehend those numbers, let alone put that into the right context to understand what you're
talking about. But speaking of a spiritual realm and a material realm and of heavens and the earth, and Yahweh having created it and going directly from there to a relationship with Adam and then Adam and Chala in a garden, it all resonated with the first hearers of those words. And yet today we can get a much greater richness and depth out of those same words. So those words have endured the test of time, and the fact that we can gain more from them than they could doesn't in any way depreciate their value for them. Mm-hmm. I would agree.
The second aspect that we didn't quite established here was online, there's a dynamic communication happening where you can ask a question and receive a response relatively rapidly in the same format. Now, at the onset, it would look like Yahweh doesn't have that same, the Torah doesn't carry that same effect.
Interaction.
Interaction. Both you and I.
Rapid response.
Know that, in fact, that is not true. Yahweh does work with us. When we have a question, we can ask it of him, and he will help us find the answer through the Torah.
Right.
But it does require some work. So there is that difference in dynamic that is something to appreciate.
Okay. Before we comment on that, and I happen to agree with you, I want to reemphasize one other point where you were saying that the Torah stands the test of time, that it communicates throughout time as opposed to an instant message or a text that is just a sliver, a slight moment in time. The language itself, Hebrew, is a language that is not stuck in time. It's the only language that I'm aware of that is wholly liberated throughout time so that there is no past, present, or future tense. Mm. So even the verbs, the action of the language, is, I don't like to say timeless, but that's the view that most of us would have. But it's not constrained in time, liberated throughout time. And that helps to reemphasize that the language itself is effectively communicating your point, your first point. Now, in the second point, there is something I think quite profound about your second point, which is that while we can ask questions and they're answered, we have to work, we have to engage to find the answer. The instant message, the text, requires almost nothing from the participants. Their thumbs fly over the keyboards of their iPhone. They don't have to move. They don't have to stand up. They don't have to engage in any way. There is no commitment. It's just thumbs flying over a keyboard.
Right. And the medium makes it incredibly accessible.
Right. And easy. And easy. Non-committal. Easy. You know, all you have to do, non-committal, that you just don't answer a text and it's over.
You know, guys, am I still on?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I'm really, much taller, darker, good-looking, wealthy online.
Yes.
I definitely have a face for radio. But there's a Brad Paisley song called So Much Cooler Online that is just hilarious. And it illustrates this representation of the self in the online environment. It's great.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of misrepresentation, but even in the nature of a relationship, as we're talking about this aspect, the covenant requires both of us to be engaged. That's why, you know, there is no comment in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms about salvation being a free gift. Because salvation is the byproduct of the covenant. And the covenant's not free. You want to engage in a relationship with Yahweh, you're going to do things. And that's the whole nature of this point that you are making that I think is so profound, is that, yes, Yahweh will give you the answer. But only if you're willing to engage to look for it. If you're not willing to invest the energy to look for the answer, to prioritize the relationship, you aren't going to get it.
There's even actually another layer of profoundness to that advice, because it works in the reverse. If you are seeking a relationship online, you cannot address it just at a surface level. You have to think about how you are engaging with that other person. You actually mm-hmm. have to do work in your correspondence, in asking questions and interpreting replies.
Right.
That was something else sure. I wanted to just mm-hmm. roll over in that there that aspect of work exists in both mediums, depending on how much you, the individual, would like to pursue that relationship.
Yeah. Now, also, there's a profound difference in the status of the individual with whom we are communicating. That's why Yahweh constantly says, you know, I mean, I've got a great relationship with Yahweh. I mean, we are good friends. Yes, he's father, but also good friend. And I understand his relative role as God and creator of the universe, and mine is flawed mortal individual. But that said, the difference between his knowledge base and understanding and mine is so gargantuan that his instruction, which is for us to listen to him, for us to observe, which is to read, use our eyes to consider what he has to say before we respond to him, to get to know him, to understand what he's offering before we respond to him, so we can respond in a reasonable and rational way. I think it's appropriate, based upon the nature of the relationship with Yahweh versus the interactions texting with somebody online. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There is a sizable difference between written and verbal communication. Verbal communication has more passion in it. There's more of a sense of emotion that comes through in it. But I think there's a reason that Yahweh, while he has spoken to us verbally, prefers written communication. And that is because it is vastly more enduring. It doesn't change. You know, once published, it remains available, unchanged, throughout time. And therefore, what we have in the written Torah is a way to know Yahweh as he was, as he is, and as he will be. And we have the terms and conditions to engage in the covenant as they were, as they are, and as they will be. So there's a considerable advantage. You know, one of the things that I noticed when I was saw question, we have a switchboard here at GCN, and it's called a STAC. I don't know why what the acronym STAC stands for, but nonetheless, it had a yah in it. And I was looking at the why. You know, I guess I've been oblivious to this. But you know that the English letter Y, the capital Y, if you were to rotate the English Y 90 degrees counterclockwise, that you have the Hebrew Y, that the first letter in Yahweh's name, which is the hand reaching out with or the arm reaching out with the open hand, and the English Y are identical, just rotated 90 degrees.
Wow.
Well, interesting legacy from the pictographic language of yesteryears. It's like the Hebrew W, the wa, and pronounced O. Sometimes just for giggles, open a dictionary and look at how many English words have the vowel O preceding the English W, or immediately after the English W, where the sound of the W is conveyed as an O. Even the letter itself is called a double U, which has the a vowel sound. Another legacy from Hebrew. Even the English word oath is the exact same word in Hebrew. We do have a continuing legacy. It's even take the word alphabet. It's from the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph and Beth.
So there is. Certainly there are also, I've heard people talk about some pagan pictographic aspects of the English alphabet as well. Mm-hmm. Don't know how valid that is, but apparently, supposedly, it's no coincidence that the capital letter A looks something like the pyramid capstone. You know, and it's supposedly no coincidence that the capital letter B is like the number 13 pushed together. And
yeah, let me give you the capital A again, but rotate it 180 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, rotate it 180 degrees. You have the Hebrew Aleph.
I don't know about that. Well, that would be much better. I'd rather have it be Hebrew in nature rather than Masonic, per se.
Yeah. You look at the capital letter L in English, rotated 180 degrees. You have the Hebrew Lamed. So there are some legacies from Hebrew, which was the first alphabet, actual alphabet. Is Paleo Hebrew. There's some legacies all the way to our alphabet today. Some legacy words and some legacy symbols, all of which help convey what God is telling us. One of the things you mentioned. Go ahead. I don't know. Is that Jake or Glenn?
That was Glenn. I was just going to say, one wonders if the rotation is. Well, you know what the intention is behind the rotating, but
yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fascinating to point out. I don't think there's much merit into going into the potential conspiracy of 180 degree rotation on the letters or 90 degree in the case of one. But I do find it interesting that there is a legacy of these things. I do find it interesting that the first actual alphabet is Hebrew. I do find it interesting that when Yahweh says that he confused the languages communicated between men, not between he and God, that the reason to do so was that man became way too powerful and too evil when we all spoke the same tongue. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about communication. One of the things, guys, that I have found is that while every answer that I've needed to know is found in the Torah, that to find the answer, I've never been in a situation where I was just saying, you know, just having a chit-chat with God and said, you know, I don't understand the answer to this question. Could you give me the answer? And then, you know, a light bulb went off in my head and there was the answer. What I find happens all the time, though, is if I'm observing what he had to say, if I'm reading his text, if I'm translating it and thinking about it, and it brings up questions, which it typically does, and making connections and understanding, that if I'm willing to engage in a more systematic, disciplined study of those words, first time the words used, other places the words used, and then even whether I'm engaged in that process, or I just move away from it and say, you know, I don't know the answer here, and, you know, go take a walk and be thinking about it, then the answers come. So it's always when I'm engaged in the process that I find the answer, and never if I'm just lazy and say, come on, I got a question, what's the answer?
Well, right, exactly. And it may not pop to mind, but certainly, immediately, but, I don't want to say Yahweh helps those who help themselves, but when we're exerting effort and seeking Him and stuff, but let's face it, we have a relationship with Yahweh through the Ruach Kodesh. Yahusha said it's better that I go away, because if I go, I'll send you another parakeet, clean another comforter with it. The Ruach Kodesh was only, once set apart. So, and the spirit of Yahweh's Ruach Kodesh can communicate directly with us, and
vastly more powerful, vastly more enlightening, vastly more enriching.
Right, and this being the case, I mean, it's interesting. I grew up as a liberal Lutheran, and you were Presbyterian, and you know as well as I do that in those denominations, the Holy Spirit, quote unquote, is largely a matter of doctrine. Okay, now if you can contrast that with the charismatic or Pentecostal movements, where there's an actual expectation of actual communication with God's Spirit, even though they've got it wrong, even though they've got things wrong.
Gibberish.
The point is, there's an actual expectation that God's Spirit actually does something once in a while. I would say it's not at all unusual to expect that Yahweh's Ruach Kodesh would bring to mind these things like Scripture, help us to, remember things and, or get an idea to go look something up and delve into it further, the idea that when we're seeking God about something and trying to get an answer, Yahweh's Spirit actually does something and helps us connect with what we need to find in the Torah.
Oh, indeed. It's like a flashlight, a lantern, illuminating the words so that there is more understanding, an ability to make connections so as to go from knowing to understanding, a sense of perspective that helps us put all of the pieces together so that we know the relationship between the various things that God is saying. So I would agree with you. And it's kind of one of the shames of Christianity is that Christianity focuses on the Kodesh Kodesh, the most set apart, the set apart, the twice set apart, and turns a man into God, as opposed to the set apart spirit, which, with exceptions of Pentecostals babbling to one another in a nonsensical language, that the set apart spirit is doctrinal, not interactive, and yet the power of Yahweh to enlighten us, the power of Yahweh to perfect us, the power of Yahweh to enrich us, the power of Yahweh to relate to us is through the Ruach Kodesh, the set apart spirit.
Right. It's funny because when I heard you speak about this, the Ruach being Kodesh versus Yahusha being Kodesh Kodesh, this is why he said, it is better for you that I go away.
It is.
Because it's one less layer of set apartness,
Right. And that layer of set apartness, just talk about power, energy, effectiveness, is at the square of the speed of light. And it's not irrelevant that it's the square of the speed of light. E equals MC squared. Energy, which the set apart spirit has as an energy based spiritual aspect of Yahweh, is represented by the E and the MC squared, where matter has to be multiplied by the speed of light times the speed of light, an enormous number, 186,000 miles per second. To be equivalent. And so the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, Yahusha, is times the speed of light times the speed of light diminished from the power and influence and ability of the set-apart spirit.
I hear a lot of people going into this. I hear people get into the... I don't hear physicists talking about this stuff much, and I hear people even saying things like matter is energy. It's like, Yahweh created matter, Yahweh created energy. And E equals MC squared defines a relationship between matter and energy. It doesn't negate matter and state that it is energy. It merely, it's giving it an idea of the energetic content of matter. You know, it's saying this is the energetic content of that matter, and it's related, you know. So I try to avoid this because I find people overstating cases, going off on tangents, or attempting to articulate concepts they don't really grasp. I'm not a physicist. And I don't hear physicists holding forth on this. I only hear lay people have a lot of physics education trying to do a lot of this. So I think
the reason that you don't hear physicists talk much about what E equals MC squared actually means is that most physicists are more comfortable in the quantum mechanics realm of calculus and of approximations, where the mindset of the relativity, for example, of light and the equation E equals MC squared energy and matter are the same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing, is a philosophical perspective that provides understanding, but that is very difficult for physicists to work with in their experimental realm, and which is why most move towards the quantum side as opposed to the relativistic side of the equation. I think that relativity and the relative nature of time vis-a-vis light and the difference between energy and matter provide really very effective approximations of the difference between spirit and matter and of time depending upon the where we are on that equation. So I find it's, right. It's a very helpful tool that when you say that Yahweh is light, therefore he's infinite in time, therefore he experiences all time simultaneously, which is why he's able to see our future and relate in our past what he has witnessed in our future. He's not predestining it. He's simply reporting future history.
Right.
When you understand light and relativity, you have a better understanding of the mechanism of that. So I think the mechanism has value.
Jacob of Arminius would be proud.
Okay.
I kind of get all that. We hear this talked about mostly in the context of Yahusha, you know, walking through walls, you know, post resurrection, you know, or that sort of thing. But my whole thing is, you know, I can't stand in front of a moving bus and just let it pass through me. So from my perspective, I surely have to act as though matter matters, you know. So like, I'll worry about all this stuff when I'm finally in Yahweh's presence and he can clarify it, but it's a little beyond my purview.
It does help you have an appreciation, however, of the fact that when Yahweh talks about empowering us as one of the benefits of the covenant, and he took Abraham to the stars and to the spiritual realm to give him an experience of what it would mean, what it would be like to be empowered as a material being to becoming a spiritual being and to be light-based, Yahweh has used that as a reference, as a benefit of the covenant. So while my puny mind can only go so far with that, at least it does give me something to look forward to. I'm looking forward to no longer being constrained by the flow of time, and I'm looking forward to as you would say, I'm taller and more handsome on the radio than I am in person. You know, this idea that, you know, we don't have the limitations of the physical body. You know. So, for example,
I would say, who shall free me from this body of death? But I know that.
Yeah.
You're not gonna like where that quote came from.
Yeah. I don't view the physical body as being a bad thing. I view it as actually being a very good thing. Give you a good example. We don't know what's out there in terms of other stars and solar systems and planetary systems and the like. We know that they're out there. We know there's other planets around other suns. We don't know if there's any that are Earth-like in the sense that they would have a solid surface with liquid or a temperate zone that could facilitate life as we know it. But I suspect there are, and I would like to visit them. I would like to explore this existing universe before it's destroyed and we witness the new one being created. While I am matter, matter matters in the sense that it is impossible for us to even go so far as to the nearest planet in our existing solar system, much less go to the next nearest solar system in our galaxy, much less go to the next galaxy, much less go to the far extremes of the universe, while we exist as matter. Yeah. But when we become spiritual and therefore like light, the time dimension of travel is no longer relevant.
Well, well, you come back and let me know. I'll be by the pool with a glass of iced tea.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll be back in a moment. As we normally cover news in the first 2 hours, I do want to cover one story here, maybe more. The African Union is reporting that its troops are actually raping the little girls that they have been sent to protect. That as in Somalia's capital in Mogadishu, as girls approach places that are providing water and food, that to get the water and food, the troops that are providing them are raping the girls. There have, I guess, in currently there's some 22,000 African Union troops that are engaged in Somalia to assault what's called the LADs, which America just recently drone killed the leader of the LADs. But just in the last year, there was over 1,700 rapes within the camps, the refugee camps, of those trying to avoid the carnage. It's a serious problem. You know, in Islam, rape is condoned. So these girls are likely to be raped by their fathers and by their husbands and by men, family members, close and distant. And that there's no consequence to the rapist, and the rape victim is often killed, humiliated in an honor killing as a result. But for these poor girls that are sexually mutilated by their mothers and sold as property by their fathers and then raped throughout their lives, even those that are there to break that cycle, to set them free, are now raping them. I read a study that was published by the United Nations just last week that says that 1 in 10 of every women around the world, 1 in 10 of women around the world under the age of 20 has been sexually abused. We are in a very hostile world. The other item in the news that I wanted to bring up is that with the United States and Europe putting all manner of sanctions on Russia for alleging that Russia has acted badly in the Ukraine, when in fact it was the United States that spurred on the thugs in Kiev that toppled the freely elected government and then paid to have the Ukraine billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars provided to the Ukraine along with NATO and CIA intelligence for them to use the American-sponsored military against the ethnic Russians in Luhansk and Donetsk, Luhansk and Donetsk. And then the Russians respond by negotiating truce between the people, and yet America wants to believe that it is holding the moral high ground here and that our sanctions are appropriate. And it reminds me of what happened in Syria, where the Obama nation wanted to go bomb Damascus, sent the American fleet towards Syria to go bomb Damascus right over the Russian fleet. And Putin negotiated a truce by coming up with a plan to destroy the chemical and biological weapons in Syria, saving the day for the world. And here now in the Ukraine, as Russia is being scapegoated, the Russians came up with the truce. And the truce, for the most part, is holding. It just shows that almost no matter where you look, right, honor, morality, appropriate behavior is the furthest from what America is doing. And is now very often associated with those that America is besmirching. America, rather than the force for good that the advertisements for the U.S. Navy would proclaim, is now a very negative and evil influence over the world. We find in Iraq, as America has now come up with this plan that the Obama-nator will announce later this week to resolve the Islamic State, which it created by bombing Iraq, by bombing the Islamic State, that there was a major attack perpetrated by the Islamic State just outside of Baghdad. Our tactics are failing once again. We'll be back.